I'd like to now introduce our speaker for tonight, Lori.
Hey, wow. Bring this because I get cold sometimes. Hi, I'm Lori, anorexic, blame it, compulsive reader.
Hi,
recovering. Thank you, Harriet, for asking me to speak. I'm a little bit nervous. I haven't spoken at this meeting in a really long time, and these microphone and things make me crazy. But that's okay. It's good to be of service. I'm a little tired today. I got back from visiting my family on the East Coast, and I didn't get into bed until about 2 in the morning. So I'm a little bit sleepy today. But it was a great trip, and I'll share more about that later because it's totally attributable to the program and to the steps and just being able to be with my family and there be sanity and healing, like amazing healing. And I guess I'll just share the typical, you know, what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. I came into OA in 1996, May of 96, and that was after being hospitalized twice, a suicide attempt. I was a self-cutter, and just a lot of, like, low-bottom stuff around my disease, and really didn't want to be here. Didn't really know how to deal with life, and the way that I coped was with food or not eating or over-exercising. My bulimia, I don't throw up. I tried it. I hate to throw up. So exercise is the way that I used the bulimia, and spent multiple hours in the gym every day, and it was really insane. I had a really difficult time leaving the gym, and I didn't know how people just, like, came in and, like, worked out and then left, you know, like, I just would stay there. It was like I felt so safe there, you know, and now that I have moments where I'm like, oh, I don't want to be here, but I'm there because, you know, I just am, but not in the insane way that I was before. And so I came in 96, and, you know, I'll just share a little bit about the disease. I mean, I'm sure we all can relate. And I have all facets of the disease. I am an anorexic, I'm a bulimic, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I see more and more of that the longer that I'm in the rooms. I really do see that I'm a compulsive overeater, you know, I have that as well. And, you know, I didn't know how to, as I said, I didn't know how to deal with life. And for me, you know, my upbringing, we weren't really a family that, like, talked about our feelings. And my dad was, and he still is, a surgeon. And my mom was a nurse and then became she stayed at home. And I rarely saw my father when I was a kid. And when I did, he wasn't the friendliest to be around. And, he just had a lot of rage, and that's who he was then, and he's changed so much since that time. And but for, you know, at the time, I didn't know how to relate to my dad, and I had two older brothers, and in my family, we all kind of went through our feelings and our experiences alone. Like, it was sort of an individual, we were together physically, but we were, like, all dealing individually. And a huge part of my story, and I've shared this so many times, but it really, I'm seeing it so clearly that it is so part of my story, is that when I was 10 years old, I got arthritis in my right hand, and they removed it, and I was told I was going to be fine. And then 2 years later, it spread all over my body. And just in case, because I get cold, so I'll stick it under here. Thank you. Thanks. And I got arthritis all over my body, and I was in middle school and it was already a tough time, you know, going through the whole, like, trying to figure out who I was, and there was tension at home, and I just suddenly had this chronic illness, this autoimmune disease that I knew nothing about other than what the doctors were saying, and I just really didn't know how to cope with it. I had all these feelings inside that I just could not talk about, and doing a four step in another program, so I'm getting really to the root of a lot of the stuff and the feelings, and I just didn't have anybody to talk to, and so I felt like so many feelings, like with God, and I felt feelings about who I was, and I was just the way that I related to my peers was different, and I don't think my parents were equipped at the time to deal with a child with an illness. They just didn't have the support, you know, and so I just felt really unsafe. I felt unsafe in so many ways. It wasn't just because of being diagnosed with a chronic illness, but it was just, there were so many things I felt unsafe about. And so for me, my comfort was food. Like, that became my best friend. I did not know at the time when I was choosing this that it was going to be my best friend. I just knew that something totally shifted in my brain and how I related to my body and my weight and food. And I remember, like, thinking, I have a big rear end. And I was in middle school, and I just suddenly became very self-conscious of my body, of my backside. And I started wearing baggier clothes, and I started wearing, like, things that were too big and didn't want anybody to see. And I just really started to hide. And a lot of that light, that little girl light that was somewhere in there, kind of disappeared, and I just started to get really shut down, and that pretty much went on through the rest of middle school and high school and then into college, and it just got worse and worse as the years went by. I just got more and more withdrawn, more and more into the food, didn't want to go hang out with my friends, I would rather stay home. And it just was really focused on my body and my weight. And when I got to college, I really it took off. Like, because I wasn't with my family. And I thought, when I come to LA, everything's going to be so much better. You know, I'll be away from my family, and everything's going to be great. And I got here, and I got worse. And I was in college, and you know, everybody was like dealing with like the freshman 15, you know, I was doing both. I was, like, compulsively overeating when I was in college, and then when I'd go home for the summer, I would restrict, and I'd get really thin, and I'd come back really thin, and thinner. I mean, no one ever told me that I was, like, I never, ever had anybody tell me that I needed to lose weight. What I would look in the mirror, and what I would see in the mirror, I saw somebody who was bigger. And that's the scary part of this disease, is that I would look in the mirror, and I would be like, I am bigger. And my friends would be telling me, you are getting smaller. And I'm like, I'm the same that I was a week ago. And they're like, no, you're not. And to me, that there's something so frightening about that, you know, to be able to not, like, trust and be able to gauge anymore the truth, what's real and what's false. And so, you know, through college, I just really spiraled down. And, you know, there's so many stories I could share. Like, I mean, I went to the gym when I had food poisoning. It was really, and I think the people were looking at me, not because I was like, they're like, oh, I want what she has, but because something's very wrong with that girl over there on the treadmill, you know, and I knew, and I just felt inside like something was just not right, and I just didn't know what it was at the time, and so I ended up having to leave school, and I withdrew, because I was in also, you know, my part of my disease is depression, and I went into really bad depression. And just I couldn't function in school. I'd go to sit in classes, and my mind would be spinning, and I wouldn't be able to retain anything. And I wanted to die on a daily basis. And I was alone. My parents were 1,500 miles away, and they weren't really seeing what was going on. And finally, I took a medical leave of absence from school, and thinking that that was going to be the right decision, but again, it just ended up, I got worse until I got better, you know, like I had to get really, really low until I was ready to be like, all right, well, the next like thing for me probably would have been death. Like I probably would have eventually like done, I mean, I tried, but I would have, if I hadn't gotten help, I would have eventually gone through with it, and it would have been an ultimate thing. But so I ended up, after, when I took this leave of absence, I ended up, I was getting outside help at the time, and I remember I was seeing her for depression, and she started asking me, like, about my food, and I thought that was kind of weird, but I would tell her, you know, she's like, what did you have for lunch? And my lunch usually consisted of fat-free, sugar-free, carb-free, everything, you know, and nothing, or I just ate so much food and I feel like crap, you know, and she was really concerned, and she started talking to me about anorexia, and I'm like, I'm not an anorexic, I eat. Like, I thought, my whole idea of anorexia was that you don't eat for days and days and days, and I started to see, like, there's different forms of this disease, you know, and so we started talking more and more about that, and eventually, I finally went into her one day, and I'm like, I can't deal with the world right now. I need to go somewhere where somebody can help me, because I'm just so lost. I have no idea what to do. And I can't hear it anymore from the people who keep telling me to eat. They're like telling me to eat, and I can't, you know. And so I ended up checking myself into a hospital. And, you know, I looked at a couple of hospitals here in California, and I ended up picking one that was a 12-step program. And I really believe, I have to believe that that was God, you know, guiding me to where I was supposed to be, you know, planting the seed of recovery. And I had like two other choices, and that was the one. I just decided that was where I wanted to go. And so that's where I got really immersed in the 12 steps. I knew some people who were in 12-step programs, but not in OA, you know. So I went to this hospital, and that's where I got the steps, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I think about my life today, and I think about steps, and there's something so powerful in step work. Like, I'm seeing it so clearly right now, and just the healing that happens when I put pen to paper, and I tell people what I'm feeling, and I tell people what I think I'm bad because of, you know, and a lot of my ism is I'm a good girl, bad girl syndrome, you know. I have, like, I'm good if I do this, and I'm bad if I do this, and I was really perfect as a kid. Like, I was like, as long as I'm perfect, everything's okay, and the walls just came down, you know, came crashing down, and that holding that perfection up just became so exhausting, and I couldn't do it anymore. And so I came out of the hospital, and I started going to meetings, and, you know, for those of you, if any of you have come in and haven't gotten it, or are just not understanding, or just having a tough time, it's okay, because when I came into the rooms, I did not get it right away. Like, I had to sit in the rooms for 9 months before I was finally ready to say, all right, what's the sponsor thing, you know? I see people being sponsored, and I know that I need somebody, but I was just so scared to trust. I was so terrified to trust anybody and to let go of the control. I mean, to me, it was like, I'm going to die if I'm not in control, you know? And that might be, like, sound weird, but, I mean, I physically thought I was going to die if I wasn't in control. The feelings inside of me, I'm like, I'm going to jump off a ledge because I have to just know what's going on, you know? And I just, to give that over was really scary. And I did. I eventually I talked about my food a lot in those 9 months, and people in the rooms just, like, loved me. They just kept saying, okay, well, I love you, and what are you going to have for lunch, you know? And let's talk about Thanksgiving, and let's talk, you know, whatever. Like, I got the love despite continually coming and being like, I just don't get this. I don't want to let go. I'm too having a hard time. And eventually, you know, I asked someone to sponsor me, and they started working the steps. And, you know, 11 years later, I'm still here. And I will have 10 years in August, on the 23rd of August, and I was thinking about, I didn't really have a whole lot of time to prepare, and that's okay, because I can really get caught up in, like, saying the most profound thing that's going to, like, change everybody's life, and, you know, it, really, I was like, God, if there's, what's one thing I was going to say to anybody, like, what would it be, and that I would need to hear, and I thought to myself, you know, the one thing that I can just totally, totally say about the program is that, I'll have 10 years in August, but really, it just doesn't matter. I mean, I'm grateful for it, don't get me wrong, but the disease, it's a day at a time. Like, my food is different from day to day, you know, and I've had, my abstinence has changed since when I first walked in here. It's very different. And maybe to somebody today, my abstinence might not look like abstinence, you know, but I've had to experiment for health reasons. I've been experimenting in the last, like, year and a half for health reasons. And I've had to really learn, like, what works for me and what, you know, doctors are telling me this. And I'm like, I'm a compulsive overeater. Like, I don't know how to. Like, I think I can do it, and then I'm continually reminded that I have to bring God into that situation. I have to bring God in. If I'm trying to do it on my own, I will fall. I will fall. And so it's been such a process for me, and also a process of letting go of what it, like, having to be perfect, you know? Like, there's been periods of time where, like, when I first came in, like, all I could do, like, was eat protein, like, because I never ate any protein. And that might sound so small and silly to somebody, but for me, like, that was a commitment that I could keep, and I kept it, and then eventually, like, I got to a place where I'm like, okay, this isn't really working anymore. I need something, like, more narrow. And you know, as they say, the road gets narrower, and it did. And then eventually I was doing, like, 3 meals a day and 2 snacks. I had no idea what 3 meals looked like until I started doing it. And then that got comfortable, and then it's really changed. And I am, wow. So it's really been such a process, and I'm in a place where I'm like, and I never thought I would be here. Oh, one more thing. But I really am questioning sugar, you know. And it's a hard one for me because when I was anorexic, like, I didn't eat anything. And I shared this in a meeting before that, like, my anorexic head says, but I didn't get to have any other things for, like, the first 15 years of my life, you know, or whatever. And so I'm entitled, you know. But there's this other voice that says, okay, is this sane, or is this your will, or is this God's will? And is this just because you're having it because you want it, or are you having it to medicate, you know? And that one I'm working through right now, you know, I'm working on it. And I don't know the answer to that yet. And I know that I, just like everything else in my recovery, like, I have to surrender it, like, it's not anything I can do on my own will. Like, I think I can say, today I'm not going to have it. And every time I do that, I end up really back in it. So it's just been a process. And I didn't share also, like, when I came in here, I was about 95 pounds when I walked in here. So I was pretty sick spiritually and emotionally and physically. And I want to talk about the spiritual because I need to talk about the spiritual, because that's really where I'm making my priority right now, is my relationship with God. And I, being in OA has actually brought me into two other programs, so I'm actually in three programs right now, but I'm just getting clearer about, and I know I'm not supposed to talk about them, and I won't be specific, but it's just like everything is related for me. Like, the food is related to this other thing, and this other thing is related to the food, and I really, I'm getting to a deeper level with God. I grew up, I didn't share anything about my upbringing, but I grew up in a very, very hardcore Christian family, and my dad was very, very, are we allowed to talk about that? Okay. My dad was very, very like, you will do this, and you will go to church, and you will sit there, and it was, it just, that was my life, you know, growing up. I was very involved, and I did have a relationship with God as a kid, and somewhere along the way, I think part of it, my being diagnosed with chronic pain, I didn't understand, and I had all these feelings about God that I never voiced to anyone, and so I automatically assumed that God hated me, because a God that loves me wouldn't give me an autoimmune disease that causes severe pain physically, and have me like limping around and on all these drugs. And I just, I really went into kind of a low place with that for many, many years. And I didn't really talk about it there. So on the outside, I appeared to be handling it very, very well. And inside, I really wasn't handling it well at all. I was confused and angry, very, very angry. And angry at people who were healthy, and angry at, you know, and I just, I really am. So for me, I, you know, growing up in that, as a Christian, I just automatically assumed I must have done something wrong, you know, because that's what they told me, like, you do something wrong. I mean, that's, not everybody told me that, but I heard what I perceived and what I took in was, if you're good, you get this, and if you're bad, you do this, and I'm seeing more and more that I'm kind of having to filter, go back and look at this stuff and kind of look at the people, like the people around me were sick. God wasn't sick. Like, the people around me might have been just telling me what they knew. And so I'm just kind of walking through that, and I've really been just the whole, my relationship with God has just changed so much. And in the last, like this last like 6 months to a year has been probably, or was like one of the hardest times in my life. I, like the last 4 months have been really hard. I was in really bad flares for like constantly for multiple months, and not able to move, and I've had periods like that, but this was just, I had hit a bottom, I think, with how I was taking care of myself and my health, and looking at my own level of denial, and, you know, the food covered all of that up, like, really, you know, I started getting into anorexia, like, very shortly after I was diagnosed, and I, all the feelings that I wanted to, that I needed to feel as a kid, have started surfacing now as an adult, and some of them aren't very pretty, but that's okay, you know. I've been a lot more, my ability to embrace them is much more today than it was even like 3 or 4 years ago. Like, I'm so much more open to even talking about it with you guys. Like, I used to be so secretive about it. I talk about it in a very general way in meetings, and I've gotten much more specific about, like, I will say, I have arthritis. Like, I have arthritis. Not, I have, well, sometimes I say I have a chronic illness. But I'm getting much, it's becoming much easier for me to just say it, you know. Like, because it's nothing to be ashamed of, you know. I don't, and I'm starting to see that, you know, as I'm, going more in the direction of recovery and asking more for God's guidance, I'm starting to see, I actually said this to a friend of mine today, I said, you know, the very thing that I thought was my curse, like, I'm starting to see in my life is totally my blessing. Like, God gave me this gift. Like, I get to use it. And my dad and I were talking, and I was talking about this trip I went on for the holiday, 4th of July, and my dad and I were talking, and my mom too, and we sat down as a family, and like we're talking about some things, talking about my health, because I've had to, I'm not working right now, I've had to go on disability, because I was just getting so sick, and that's been such a humbling experience for me to receive without having to feel like I have to do something, and that it's okay to ask for help. It's been one of the biggest things I'm learning is that it's imperative that I ask for help and that I let people in. And I never wanted to do that. And I was talking to my parents while I was away, and my dad asked me, if they never find a cure in your lifetime, would you be okay with that? And I said, I think I would be okay with that. And the fact that I said that was like totally, that was just totally God, because I've been getting to such a moral level of surrender, you know, and the more that I can surrender, like, the more my life is just, like, so much more graceful, and I've just been able to do some just things I never in my wildest dreams thought I would do, and walk through things, and like, I've been doing some work in Washington, D.C. around this, and like, I never imagined I would be, like, on the hill, you know, like, you know, and it's just such a gift, and I really, I have my good days and I have my hard days, but I just, it's brought me closer to God, you know, and having this disease, being a compulsive overeater and being an anorexic and a bulimic, it's like, having the disease has really, in some ways, and I don't know what other word to use, but forced me or given me the opportunity. Like, it's, again, it's imperative that I turn to a higher power. Like, and I'm so grateful, because I don't know how much seeking I would be doing if I didn't have this disease, you know, and questioning and really asking, okay, God, what is your will? And what do you want me to do? And, okay, I messed up again today. What do I do? You know, and it wasn't perfect while I was away. You know, I was really having a hard time coming here because I felt like my food wasn't perfect, you know, and I'm going to be like, it's going to be awful, you know. And I just, my friend reminded me, she's like, think about where you were at 10 years ago when you walked in here versus where you're at now. Is your food the same? No. I said, I have much more awareness and things are very, very different. And you know, I'm doing a 4-step in another program but 4-step boy, major house cleaning, even I've done steps in here too. And my life changed, you know, when I did my 4th and 5th step. I mean, all the steps are amazing. And the 4th step, there's just something so powerful. And I really, like, when I was home, I've had so much anger, you know, with my family, you know, and just getting to a place where I'm kind of like, okay, do I want to stay clinging to that same story? Do I really want to be identified by that story? Or do I want to create a new one? You know, and have, you know, and I've been asking God, I'm like, God, please show me how to forgive my dad, you know, and I was reminded by a fellow that you ask and God will show you, don't worry, you know, maybe not right today, but God will show you, and I feel like the walls are coming down. I mean, just this last 2 weeks, just the conversations that I had with my mom and dad, and pretty amazing, you know, and being able to say things that I was so terrified to say and being able to speak and to, like, have them hear me and love me and, you know, just communicate, you know, because that's so much of my of my fears. I don't want to talk, you know. And one of my sponsors, she now lives in Mexico, right after I did my fourth step, said to me, the key for you is going to be to talk. And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, like, I just didn't want to talk. I'm like, please. And I cried. I cried for days because I'm like, please don't make me talk. Please don't make me talk. Please don't make me tell anybody how I feel because they'll leave. You know, that was my biggest fear, that if I tell you what I'm thinking or if I show you who I really, really am, you're going to leave me. And I'm finding that the more that I tell people how I feel and the more that I let them in, the closer I am to them. And the ones who do go away weren't meant to be in my life in the first place. And so, wow. what time did I start? 6:20? Amazing. Gosh. I'm just trying to think of what else to share. I guess what I'll say is, you know, I'm probably going to just end up stopping early because I don't really know what else to say. And other than, you know, the one thing that I can encourage if you're struggling and you haven't, don't know what abstinence is or are having a hard time getting it, is that, you know, just keep coming back, because that's the one thing, you know, that I have done. I've done pretty much consistently, even in, like, what is very, very imperfect food and what is very, very imperfect life. I have kept coming. I've been through death. I've been through birth. I didn't give birth, but the birth of my nieces and nephews. And I've been through just a lot of things in abstinence and with the support of this program and support of people in it. And I'm really just so grateful for my connecting with God more and more. Like, I'm just so grateful for that. And it's like I crave it so much today. Like, I just want it so bad. And when I walked in here, I was so scared of God, you know. And so it's really cool. I don't know. I don't really know what else to say. So I think I'm going to just stop, and I want to just thank you all, and thank you again for asking me. Any questions? Yeah.
Hi, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm wondering, could you talk a little bit about how you work your 11th step?
Oh, wow. Thank you. And wow. That's a hard one for me. It's a hard one. I pray, like, for me, you know, I've gone down on my knees and done the prayer, and I've done, just for me, a lot of times prayer is just communicating with God constantly all day long. The meditation has been the toughest for me, and it's probably not a coincidence that you're asking me that question, because I've been really encouraged by multiple people in my life to start getting into the practice of meditation. That one's a tough one for me. I have a really tough time sitting still. And sometimes for me, meditation, like, is a yoga class or taking a breath, you know. And I tend to think I have to swallow it all at one time. Like, if I meditate, I have to meditate for 30 minutes every day. And I've been really reminded that, like, start with 1 minute. You know, 1 minute, you know, and build from there. And so it's very imperfect, but I'm working on it. So, yeah.
Lori, how do you take your sponsees through the first 3 steps?
Okay. Well, my sponsor, she doesn't sponsor me anymore, but I tend to stick to her guideline, because it really helped me, is that I first get an idea of where they're at with their food. Like, I have them check in their food with me for about a month just to kind of see where they're at. And then I have them do like read the first step and change the words alcohol to food, and then write what they relate to, write about what they relate to, and then write where they're powerless in their life, like over food and whatever else they feel the need to write about. Because I don't believe it just is all the food. It's everything, you know. And then the second step, I do the same. I have them read it. And again, you know, underline and write about what they relate to. And then with the fourth, I mean, with the second step, there's like four parts. I have four parts. I'm happy to be happy to share them with you if you'd like. And then the third step, I tell them that starting of the action step, you know, really, you know, turning, you know, your will and your life over to God. And I ask them when we go through it, I ask them when they've finished doing their writing, I say, do you feel like you've taken the first step? Do you feel like you can, without a doubt, say that you are powerless over? And then when they said yeah, then I move them to the next one. So, yeah, sure. Yeah.
What do you do on a daily basis for your
program? Well, I try to get to as many meetings as I can. I'm in multiple programs, so for me, it's really a balance between working all three. It can be tough sometimes. I have daily meditation readings that I, the books that I have, and I'll read from that. I've been going to meetings like pretty consistently every day, not since I've been out of town, but I've been trying to get to sometimes two meetings a day. But that's just because I have a lot of time on my hands. I talk to my sponsor, sponsees. I have sponsees that call me twice a week and one that checks in with me every day. And as I said about the prayer, like for me, I was praying like pretty formally, but now it's been more of like just talking to God, you know, throughout the day and asking God to, you know, if I'm having trouble with something or if I'm needing guidance or just want to talk. So that's some of the things that I do. I'd like to say I'm in a place right now where I have this consistent thing that I do every single day, but it's not. I kind of take the tools and I use them throughout the day. So, yeah.
Can you tell us about how you view God now?
It's definitely a work in progress. I'm starting to see God more as loving, you know. And one of my sponsors had me do. I've been through a few sponsors just because one moved away and then others just changed. But I had one sponsor who, when I did my second or third step, she had me write a want ad. You know, like, what do I want? All the characteristics of God that I want. And I did that, and that was really helpful. Like, it was, like, loving, kind, gentle, my best friend. And it's really changing, you know. And part of me is starting to kind of dabble with my childhood upbringing again. You know, like, allowing myself to ask the questions and to go to people that I feel safe with and say, these are the questions that I had 15 years ago that I'm afraid to ask now. I mean, that I was afraid to ask then that I really want to ask now. So it's been, like, as I said, I'm craving God more than I've ever craved God in my life. And that to me is like a huge miracle. Yeah, sure. Is that it? That's fine. So we end at 6:15. Okay. All right.